You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, December 30th, 2024. Grandpa Dan, streaming with you on RadioAlbion.com, wrapping up 2024. We are wrapping it up. We're coming up on a New Year's. Programming note is, hopefully some of you might have noticed, that I wasn't here, didn't have a show for Friday. And the truth of that matter is, I actually did have a show. I recorded an entire show for Friday. But I sat down and started, when I sat down and started doing the write-ups and getting ready to edit it, I just wasn't happy with it. You know, I've always had this attitude of, I refuse to feel as though I'm phoning in a show. And at the end of the day, I was not happy with the show. You know, I always put my best effort in, of course. It wasn't due to a lack of effort, but I just wasn't satisfied with the end project or with the end product. And as such, I just said, you know what? I've always said, if I can't produce a show that I'm happy with, I'll just skip it and go back at it the next time. And that's what I ultimately decided to do. So that's why we didn't have a show on Friday. I did actually record one. At the end of the day, I wasn't happy with it. So I just skipped. But we are back today. We are back today for another edition of Daily Mail Monday. And we're going to start right off with more, I know you just love it, American politics. the very cynical nature of American politics. And when I say American politics, you of course have to encompass, you have to include in that the media, all of it. You know, it's all one entity, corporations, the media, the government. I mean, all of it is one massive entity. So we have to look at it together. Now, fallout continues over Biden's obvious fact that he's been senile. We have yet to get an apology. I did a show recently called Debunking Being Debunked or something like that about this very topic. But some fallout continues, and we have yet to get an apology. All of us who were pointing out for years that this guy doesn't know where he's at. And I think one of the reasons they're really timid about this is the fact that it really is half a step away from acknowledging the entire 2020 election was a hoax, which it obviously it was. This idea that the senile old man campaigned from his basement. We all saw the photos and the videos of when he did make a rare campaign appearance. There would be like five people there. He couldn't fill a high school gymnasium. It'd be like five people there. So they just quit putting him out in public. And yep, he got more votes supposedly than anybody in the history of America. I think that's one of the reasons they're very shy about acknowledging this. But nevertheless, I want my apology. I want them to retract all the debunking. I think the fact checkers need to come out and make a public apology because we were right all along. This headline is Biden's obvious cognitive decline was the most underreported story in 2024, says veteran CBS journalist. President Joe Biden's obvious cognitive decline was the most underreported story of the year, a veteran CBS News reporter has claimed, as she insists that more coverage could have changed the scope of the entire election. I have to stop here. You're one of them. Don't you love how somebody is so self-serving like this? This woman comes out and says, oh, this was just horrible. The media trolling. It's like, you're the media. Why weren't you reporting? What, did you just didn't know? Where the hell were you? Why weren't you the one breaking the story? And now she's acting like, oh, well, I didn't have anything to do with it. This was this underreported story. Why, if only the media, you're the media. Jan Crawford, CBS's chief legal correspondent, blasted media that failed to cover his decline. Many liberal outlets, including the Washington Post, until the topic became undeniable during his train wreck debate against Donald Trump. Crawford, during the year-end correspondence roundtable at CBS's Face the Nation, was asked Sunday morning what the most undercovered and underreported topic was this year. That would be, to me, Joe Biden's obvious cognitive decline that became undeniable in the television debate, she said, unquestioned. It was only being denied by you. It was only being denied by you people in the media. The rest of us out here were pointing out the obvious, and we were getting ridiculed by you. Y'all said we were making claims without evidence. Y'all were the ones that said, oh, well, this is just conspiracy theory nonsense. Misinformation. You need to be banned from social media. You need to shut up. We need more laws, in fact, to protect all of us from this Russian disinformation or whatever the hell smears they did. And now, oh, yeah, it was underreported. It wasn't underreported. It was covered up, or an attempted cover up. It's just that it was so stupid and so obvious that the rest of us seen it and it didn't work. And now you're trying to play catch up, trying to act like, oh, we're so shocked. This was just, now it's undeniable. Yeah, it was undeniable. Y'all tried to cover it up. And then when it became just laughably obvious at some point, the narrative fell apart. And now y'all trying to save face. Trying to act like, oh, wow, those other journalist people out there should have done something. Where the hell were you, bitch? What did... I'm sorry. I'm trying to clean some of that up. But really, where were you at? Acting like you didn't know. You yourselves were just all innocent babes in the woods. You weren't a part of the cover-up. These other journalists should have done it. Also, I have to say this. One of the most ridiculous things in this whole thing, this system we live under, is these Sunday morning news shows. I don't know if you've ever attempted. I haven't watched one in years. I used to attempt to watch them many years ago. And I come to the realization of how ridiculous they were, even back then. They're just more absurd now. You have these entire TV shows that consist of basically a bunch of media people, a bunch of journalists, sitting around and talking to one another as though they are the experts. They'll sit around and it's like, oh, this is, you know, insert latest big political topic of the week. For more information, for more on this, we're bringing in some expert on said political topic. No, we're bringing in White House correspondent so-and-so. They bring in another journalist, and then you have these journalists talking to one another about, you know, oh, yes, well, this means this, well, this means that. And obviously, we can take from this story, y'all don't even know what the hell, not that this is new information, not that we really needed somebody to point it out. We've, most of us with any kind of intellect at all, figured out a long time ago that none of y'all have any clue of what you're talking about. You're just parroting whatever lines you're given. You're just basically C-grade actors playing a role. And then they all have the nerve to get together and have a round table, and they all talk to each other very seriously because they obviously are so smug. They all obviously think they just know so much. The plebs out there, the peasants out there are so lucky. They can tune in and listen to us. We're obviously smart. We live in New York City, but we got to be smart. We have journalism degrees and we're on TV and everything. So we get around and have a roundtable news show so we can inform you what we think. And to make things even more laughable, and this goes back to what I pointed out earlier, I think many of them are nervous because this brings people a step closer to having to admit that the 2020 election was a hoax. Because that was just as obvious as Biden being senile. And if Biden was senile, that brings them in. It brings them closer to having to admit the election was a hoax. And then what do you do? So as a result, we have some of them still. They're voicing their discomfort here. CBS News chief election and campaign correspondent Robert Costa, who also participated in the roundtable, seemingly defended the administration, telling Crawford, President Biden has said repeatedly he was sick during the debate June 27th in Atlanta, and he's always been fine, and he leaves fine. That is his position, the position of many of his top aides as well, even though there is that reporting. So you have this line, where they're talking about the, and I got into this on the last show, so I don't want to really get into being, you know, just repeating what we've already done. But they go through this whole thing of, oh, yes, the White House was gaslighting the American people, acting as though they, the media, had no role in it at all. And then they still turn around and attempt to gaslight everybody. Oh, well, the administration says he was fine. Now, there is a tell in what he says. President Biden is also leaving fine, because this underlying question, and again, I brought this up during that last show on this topic. The underlying question is then, why is it okay that he's president? Now, if he's so senile, they have to admit he's senile. His dementia is to the point it's undeniable and can't be covered up. Then why are they still letting this guy be the president? Well, every time you read a news story about, oh, the Biden administration is shipping more weapons and more money to the Ukraine. Oh, this is going on. The Biden team, this, the Biden administration, Joe Biden, this, Joe Biden, that. We all know it isn't him now. That's basically been acknowledged by the media. And yet these same media who are still trying to save face, rather, are now trying to go. They'll turn around and still basically act like Joe Biden is sending more money to the Ukraine or whatever. They're not asking the questions who's making these decisions, because obviously they've already admitted on the one hand that Joe Biden isn't. So who is? And who the hell gave them the authority? Nobody voted for these people that are making these decisions. Why is the media on the one hand now is trying to act like, oh, it was just terrible how nobody else reported on this, but they themselves were part of it, part of ignoring it, part of gaslighting, part of slandering people pointing this out as a bunch of Russian disinformation shills, part of a conspiracy. They need to be banned. They need to be silenced. We need some guardrails on free speech so these type of people can't be going around talking about Joe Biden is senile when that's obviously he's just fine. And now they're trying to run around. Now they're trying to run around and act all like, oh, no, well, why didn't somebody do this? It's your job. Hell, it was your job. What do you mean? Why didn't the media? You are the media. Who the hell are you talking about? Now my theme here for today's show is the cynical nature of American politics. It is very cynical. Maybe I'm cynical about it because it's stupid. It's all ridiculous theater. It's not even interesting theater anymore. Our next story, vengeful Democrats boast about the surprising way Jimmy Carter's death will affect Trump's inauguration. As many of you know, a former American president back from the 70s, a one-term president who was a failed president, Jimmy Carter, he died. He died at the age of 100. As a president, he was pretty much inept. I mean, he was known for bringing about things that we all hated back then. Of course, I was just a kid back then, but I still remember vaguely. He was not popular. He got more popular after he was out of office, because he'd go around and do this Habitat for Humanity and take photo ops, you know, nailing boards together and stuff. But he died. He died at the age at the ripe old age of 100. And so, you know, now we have this headline, you know, because it's in the news. Vengeful Democrats are boasting. Democrats are boasting that Jimmy Carter's death could overshadow Donald Trump's upcoming inauguration due to a long upheld tradition. Standard protocol states that all flags should be flown at half mast at federal buildings for 30 days following the death of a former president. Carter, the 39th U.S. president, died at 100 years old on Sunday afternoon, almost 2 years after entering hospice care, and just 22 days before Trump's inauguration on January 20th. Outspoken MAGA critics and Democrat voters have quipped that the half-mast flags during such a pivotal moment are Carter's parting gift to Trump after their long-standing feud. I'm so glad for this great man's passing, but this is going to piss off the orange clown so much, and I've convinced myself this was Jimmy Carter's plan the whole time. He planned to die. Just, yeah. One person wrote. Another added, can't help but smile knowing flags will be at half mast during Trump's inauguration to honor Jimmy Carter, one of the most decent humans to walk the earth, and the very opposite of who's to come. His parting gift? U.S. flags will be at half-mast on all federal buildings on Trump's inauguration day. Supporters describe the timing as a better unintended consequence of Carter's death. Now, of course, this is one of those ridiculous news stories, and it's not just Daily Mail that does this. They all do this. This is one of those, I mean, who are we talking about? Randos on Twitter? Randos on Reddit? When you get these, this is a regular feature now of the media. Same media, by the way, that couldn't report that Joe Biden didn't win the election and was senile all this time. The same media does these ridiculous stories about rando Twitter people, rando Redditors, and make it a news story. But I went ahead, and I guess I am too, if I'm being honest, because we're doing this story. More cynical nature, though, of American politics. So this guy died. And it's just saying, yeah, this old guy died, you know, 100 years old, whatever. Oh, it's all about half, like the flags will be half staff because, you know, when Trump gets inaugurated, this will teach the old, I mean, how long are they going to keep the flags at half staff when we're still, what, about basically 3 weeks away from Trump being inaugurated? I mean, how the hell long are we going to do this for a whole month? How long do we have to keep the flags at half staff? So I said, hell, the flags are half staff all the time anyway. I mean, y'all go outside and the flags are half staff. I don't even know why. I'd be like, why are the flags at half staff? Oh, because some congressperson died, or I don't know, some cop died or something. I don't know. The flags are half staff. Flags at half staff are like those Amber Alerts. You get them things all the time. And you're like, you know, you don't know if you didn't know. You're like, why am I getting an Amber Alert? My gosh, was somebody's toddler out wandering around and stranger danger snatched them off the street? Then you look and it's like some teenage girl ran off with a guy from the internet. Or my personal favorite, the child was last seen with their mother, or they were last seen with their father. He didn't bring them home at the scheduled time on Sunday. Be blown. I finally found out how to turn that shit off my phone because I got tired of it blowing up my phone with these ridiculous Amber Alerts I don't care about. Now, flags at half staff are the same thing. Go to the post office. Flags are half staff. I don't even know why. Don't care. But this is a win. This is a win for the this is a win for the Trump derangement people. Now, for those of you who undoubtedly tune into my Parish of the Patriots program, I've been saying for a while that, like, the Trump supporters have turned him into a messianic figure. They has become like a cult. And the flip side of that are these Trump derangement people that have also turned him into like a bigger than life figure. I mean, I always laugh at these people that act as though, you know, he's this huge threat, this huge danger. They turn him into this godlike figure that's going to destroy their personal lives, even though he was in there for 4 years and nothing of much substance actually changed. Now, a lot has changed since 2016 in Trump himself, and I'm not going to get into that today. I'm tentatively considering getting into that next week's Parish of the Patriot show. I don't know. It's way off. I'll probably wind up rambling about something else you don't care about, but I may talk about it then. There's a huge difference between Trump 1.0 and now we have Trump 2.0. His fervent supporters are completely ignoring it, and apparently so. His fervent adversaries, those who are just inflicted with this deranged deal. Imagine celebrating somebody you claim, on the one hand, you're claiming this was one of the best human beings that walked the earth, and no, he's not. I'm sorry, he's just not. What, he went around and did Habitat for Humanity for photo ops? Look, there's a lot of everyday people out there that do more for their fellow man in their everyday life with no acknowledgement, which tells you that's a good person. Anybody can run around with TV cameras and say, look what a good person I am. That doesn't mean you're a good person. That means you're just in front of the camera for a photo op. It's a whole nother matter to go out and do the right thing, and you know nobody's even going to know. You know no one's even going to acknowledge it. You're not going to get any press coverage. You're not going to get any accolades. When you die, no one's going to say, my gosh, this was a great human being that walked the face of the earth. That's what really good human beings do. They do the right thing when nobody's looking. When they're not even wanting any acknowledgement, they're doing the right thing because it is the right thing to do. Now, you have these people who make this boastful claim that this old man was just one of the best human beings that walked the face of the earth. And on the other hand, they're basically, thank goodness he died, because the flags will be at half staff and it'll just be one more way to put the thumb in the eye of the evil orange man. It's a cult figure on the opposite side, where the MAGA people have turned him into a false Christ. The Trump derangement people have turned him into a false Satan. It's just all, I don't know. I could easily go off into a preaching mode right now. I ain't going to do it. But it's just a reflective of the fact that this is a, as an entirety, we live in a godless nation. So they're constantly creating fake ones. Where they have to create a fake God, a fake Messiah, or they have to create a fake Satan. You see, they're just having to create this whole fake, because they've, it's a nation that's rejected God. And they're godless and wicked people. Bring on the hellfire and brimstone to this modern day Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, I got one more story. And this one's actually interesting. And this deviates from our cynical American politics. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. And this is a much more interesting story. Headline is, experts reveal the almost criminal error that caused so many to die in fiery South Korean plane crash, and the puzzling signs about what triggered the disaster that killed 179. Now, many of you probably know by now when there was this plane crash in South Korea. And the media is already starting to build a narrative here. I knew that, you know, we always know they will. And it's never, I want to say, it's never centered around the truth. But this is one of those instances where you get an element of truth, but it's the stuff they're leaving out. The stuff they're leaving out is what's largely, I think, more relevant. We're going to get into that a little bit, because maybe you don't know. Maybe you don't know. So I want to go ahead and get into this story. Experts say the construction of a concrete wall at the end of a runway was an almost criminal error that led to the deaths of 179 people in a plane crash in South Korea. The Jeju airplane skidded off the runway in the town of Muon, 180 miles south of Seoul, slammed into a concrete barrier and burst into flames on Sunday after its landing gear apparently failed to deploy. All but two of the 181 people aboard the Boeing 737-800 were killed in one of South Korea's worst aviation disasters, officials said. Leading air safety expert David Learmount told Sky News that having a concrete wall at the end of the runway was verging on criminal, and said the collision with the wall was the defining moment of the disaster. This is not true. We're going to get into that in a minute. He suggested that had the wall not been there, the plane would have instead hit a fence, slid over a roll, and likely stopped in a nearby field. I think everybody would have been alive. The pilots might have suffered some damage going through the security fence or something like that, but I never suspect they might. I even suspect they might have survived, Mr. Learmount said. Airline pilots also chimed in, saying that the jet likely lost power on at least one engine and suffered a hydraulic failure after the plane was hit by a bird. And now we're getting into out and out, how shall I put this, bullshit. This is bullshit. Now, we're going to get into this, and we're going to get into what they're not telling you. I'm interested in aviation. We'll just put it that way. I'm interested in aviation, have been for some time. And I have a little bit of knowledge of these things. And I follow some people who know what they're talking about in this field, videos and people I read and such, that actually know what they're talking about, not this gibberish that they go and talk to here. And they're giving you this granule of truth, and they're crafting a narrative. And we're going to talk about what that narrative is and what they're leaving out. Most importantly, what they're leaving out. Now, first, this issue of the quote-unquote wall at the end of the runway. They can't even give you the detailed information. Look, you ever seen an airplane? You ever been on an airplane, you know, and the weather is shit, and you're looking out and you can't even see the ground, and yet the plane you're riding on, is coming in for a landing, and you're like, how are they doing that? Well, it's done with radio transmission. It's a very old system. It's a radio transmitter. It's intercepted by the plane. They call it an ILS. And it lines them up on the runway. So it has little, basically, radio antenna things down at the end of that runway. They're lined up with runway. That's why they're there, because the plane has to line up, and there's a little, what amounts to like a little gauge on there. And it just centers up. When you're lined up with the radio signal, it's in the center. And it also tells you how high or low you are. So they just keep that needle lined up, and then they break through the clouds. They can see the runway. They land the airplane. That is why this little antenna array is lined up at the end of the runway. That's why it's there. Now, at normal airports here in America, as bad as America is, they are designed to be destroyed. In the event that something happens, they are put on a little concrete pad that's more or less level with the ground. They're bolted down. I read one person said that he was involved and he used to build these things. And he said where they're bolted to the concrete pad, they would even hacksaw the bolts halfway through to make it even more destroyable if they were to be hit. Apparently, in Korea, they decided, man, these things cost money. So they built this huge, thick concrete wall. People are talking about a dirt berm. That's older pictures. There's pictures of the crash site, and there's this thick concrete wall in front because they didn't want those things getting destroyed. My gosh, they cost money. And this plane slammed into the concrete wall, and of course, that was the end of it. But as I said, that's only a nugget of the story. What this person is saying, that, oh, they would have all survived. It would have just slid out there, maybe into the road, and would have been totally fine. It's bullshit. Let me tell you what they're not talking about. The pilots panicked, okay? I'm going to be interested to find out who the pilots were. Were they Koreans? How many hours did they have? Were they Korean pilots? Were they Indian pilots? I want to know some specifics about who these pilots are, and eventually we're going to get those. The media probably won't talk about it, so you'll have to follow it if you want to get the information. And maybe I'll keep following it. Maybe I will pass it along if y'all are interested in it. The pilots are the key here. This is 100% pilot error. It is 100%. Preliminary. I know this is fresh. We don't have all the information. Blah, 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 blah. Look, this is 100% pilot error. And I'm going to tell you why that is. Again, let me just give you the rundown of the particulars. You can verify this yourself. Go on YouTube, do some searching. There are plenty of videos by people there's plenty of commentary, there's plenty of videos by people who have a lot of hours in this plane, retired airline pilots, etc. This is not one of Boeing's junk airliners. This is one of the decent ones. You know, people are like, oh, it's Boeing again. That isn't the case here. People, they're like, well, this is just Boeing sucking again because of diversity. That's not correct. This is one of Boeing's good planes. There's any number of people who have tons of hours flying this plane. It's a good plane. It's not the plane. This isn't Boeing. This is pilot. There are any number of people who have a ton of hours in this plane that will tell you, okay, first off, there's three hydraulic systems, okay? The redundancy on this particular plane is absurd. Yes, the controls are hydraulic. The landing gear, all this is hydraulic. There are three redundant hydraulic systems. Losing one engine from a bird strike is a non-event. I was reading one. A retired pilot was talking about this, and he's like, losing an engine on this plane, the passengers aren't even going to know unless they're looking out the window. It's a nothing burger. It is a huge nothing burger. Just imagine Chud sitting up there. It's a nothing burger. And just landing the damn plane. Three redundant hydraulic systems, but that's not all. Yes, the hydraulics are powered by the engines. They also have electric motors. In case that fails, they have electric motors that kick in. Yes, they don't work as well, but you're not left with nothing. But wait, that's not all. This particular plane, has a panel. You open up and there's three levers and you pull these cables. There's no hydraulics involved. You pull these cables, it pops the hatches, and the weight of these heavy ass landing gear, they will flop down all on their own. And by the way, there's no speed limit on this particular. Most planes have retractable landing gear. There's a speed limit. If you're going so fast, you cannot drop the gear. Not this one. You can drop the gear at full power on this plane. It don't make a shit. You pull the manual cables, it pops the hatches, and the weight of the gear will drop out, and you have landing gear. Now, what's telling is, you can tell I'm talking now, I'm talking about something I'm actually interested in, not like this American political BS. What's interesting is, from the time they declared a mayday, you know, they declared an emergency, to the time the crash happened was something like 7 minutes. That is ridiculous. This is red flag number one that the pilots, because there's at least two in this plane, the pilots panicked. Okay. Again, losing a single engine on this plane should be a chud tier nothing burger. You have an extensive checklist as a pilot, and there's two of them for a reason. You're not just one guy trying to do it all on your own. You start going through the emergency procedure checklist. Yes, what's one of the things on the checklist? Pull the freaking cables. What, you don't have landing gear, won't come down? You have an engine out. Okay, you automatically, when the engine out, these guys have to retest on these planes like every 6 months. They go in simulators. They have to go through a whole retest of these different scenarios. Oh, you have an engine out. Okay, well, this plane will fly all day long on one engine. They could have, on one engine, flown to an airport in Seoul or whatever that has a longer runway if they were that worried about it. It's a nothing burger. Any pilot with experience, whether it's in this plane or not, will tell you the first thing you're going to do in an emergency like this, okay, you still have one engine. Everything's cool. You slow things down. You don't speed things up. You slow things down and you start, okay, let's take a deep breath. Let's start running through our emergency. We've declared our emergency. Let's start running through our checklist procedure. What do we need to do? This is not like the plane that obviously inadvertently got shot down by Russia's anti-aircraft systems last week. Look, they still had an engine. By every account, they still had an engine. Why? Because they wound up doing a go around. They were originally supposed to land one direction, wound up coming in the other way. So they had an engine because they were able to go around and circle in and come in and land. So they had an engine. They should. The first thing you do is, you know, like I read one pilot said, first thing you do in an emergency like this, you're trained to do is you wind the clock. In other words, slow down. Yes, you have adrenaline pumping. You got to stop and slow down. Everything's fine. The plane is not going to fall out of the sky. This plane could have flown on to Seoul on one engine, and it's a nothing burger. But 7 minutes after the bird strike, they're declaring an emergency. This idea that a bird strike is not going to make the landing gear go down is utter bullshit. This plane has a manual. You yank the cables, they'll fall out. You got landing gear. Next up. If you've seen the video of this plane landing, crashing, you know, when it came in, that sucker's cooking. You ever notice how fast it's going? That's way too fast. Why? Well, they have flaps, what you call flaps, come down. It slows the plane down. What flaps do on an aircraft is it slows the plane down, but it increases lift. So the plane is going to go slower, but it's not going to go so slow that it stalls and crashes into the ground. This is why on a normal landing, you deploy flaps. Again, you say, well, the hydraulics were failed. They couldn't deploy the flaps. Again, they have electric motors as a backup on this plane. Yes, they're not going to work as well. They're going to take longer. This is why you're supposed to take your time in an emergency like this, because you're going to, okay, well, let's see. The checklist says if the flaps won't deploy, engage the electric motors to deploy the flaps. They're going to take longer. Take your time. No flaps, no spoilers. The thing came in hot, came in too fast, encountered ground effect, which is when you're flying at too high of a speed, you you think of it as you're compressing the air between the ground and the wings. This little factoid, by the way, is relevant if you think about the plane allegedly smashing into the Pentagon during 9/11, but we're not going there today. The guy came in too fast, the pilot came in too fast, encountered ground effect, and the plane floated down the runway. Where you see on the video where he hits, he's halfway down the damn runway. And he's cooking. This notion that if the wall, yes, the wall's stupid. The concrete barrier around the ILS towers is stupid. But this notion that if that hadn't been there, it would have just stopped like 20 feet later and everybody would have walked away. Look, he was cooking at that speed. He was going to, that little cement cinder block wall at the edge of the airport, that wasn't going to stop that plane either. I saw yesterday they're estimating when they hit that wall, they were still doing 150 miles an hour. Or I'm sorry, 150 knots. I believe they're doing knots there. That's faster than normal approach speed for a normal landing on this airplane. So when they hit the wall, they were already skidding on the ground. So that tells you he was cooking. No flaps deployed, no nothing. 7 minutes from declaring emergency to they're all dead, but two people. Now the media, this is your brief incursion into this. You can go find this information yourself if this interests you. The media is running around pointing at the brick wall, which, yes, that's stupid. More people might have survived, yes, if that hadn't been there. I will agree with that. But this idea that everybody would just walked away to been nothing if that hadn't been there is nonsense. They're hand-waving away that the pilot freaking panicked. Again, the other engine was working. I see people out there hypothesizing that, well, the other engine might have failed. Then how the hell did they do a go around and come in and land from the other direction? Which in and of itself was stupid. If the landing direction, I don't know what the winds were that day. You always got to land into the wind. If they landed with a tailwind, that's exasperating things. Again, this all points to pilot panic. They freaked the hell out and just wanted to get this piece of junk on the ground and walk away. Who the pilots were is going to be the tell here. When that one Boeing crashed, when the last Max plane crashed, and I think it was Ethiopian Airlines or something, or I don't remember which country it was. I don't feel like looking it up. But when they got the cockpit voice recorders, they had all these. There was like three of them in the cockpit, and they were all panicking. Because none of them knew the procedure, what to do. And all they had to do was trim the airplane out. None of them thought to manually trim the airplane. They're sitting there fighting the yoke, which is aviation 101. If you're fighting the yoke, trim the airplane out. And they didn't do this, and they crashed and killed everybody. It was a stupid design from Boeing. But the fact that these incompetents in the cockpit, there's three of them, they freaked out and couldn't figure out the simple, most basic thing to do in an airplane, tells you something. The pilots freaked out. In 7 minutes, killed everybody but two people. That's the story. That's the takeaway. I guarantee you that's not going to change. This hand waving at the brick wall as though these pilots did everything they could. And if the brick wall hadn't been there, but wouldn't have died. That's nonsense. Watch. I'm anxious to find out the background of the pilots involved. That'll come out. You're going to have to look for it. This news story will be yesterday's news by the time that comes out. But this is what they're distracting from. Oh, and I have to say this, morons. I've seen no shortage of morons. I have no idea what they're talking about. And you just stop. Please, just stop. I saw morons on the internet going, well, why didn't they just land it on the water? That is one of the most dumb things I've seen. I know you watched Miracle on the Hudson movie about Scully or whatever that guy's name, the pilot, you know, up there in New York. That's the exception, not the rule. Water is no different than if you hit water in a plane, it's no different than hitting concrete. Except that once the plane breaks apart, everybody drowns. That's the difference. The plane is going to break apart. It didn't in that instance. Just the guy had skill and luck was on their side. That is not the norm. The norm is that water is like cement. More than likely, the plane is going to break apart and then everybody drowns. So, yeah, anytime you say, oh, they should have just landed on the water, it would have just been like, you know, riding a raft. Or that's stupid. That would have been the poorest option. No, they should have gone through their checklist, manually dropped the landing gear, and had a normal landing. Anyway, maybe y'all aren't as interested in that story as I obviously am. But I find it interesting that the media is creating this bullshit narrative about, oh, it's just the wall. Again, the wall is stupid. You normally wouldn't, you shouldn't have that. Why would you build a giant cement wall? The towers are supposed to be designed to where, yeah, you just smash through them. It's a nothing. If you smash them in a little airplane, they just fold up and go away. Yeah, that is one part of it. But the whole big elephant in the room, the pilots freaked out. I'm watching. I'm going to be waiting to see who these pilots actually are. Again, I apologize if y'all aren't as interested. I'm more interested in this than, you know, the evil orange man in American politics. We have a wide variety here on Daily Mail Mondays. This story's more interesting to me. I'm going to be keeping up with it. I don't know if y'all are. And again, I hope y'all might have been interested in it. We're going to wrap up. I will be back tomorrow with the Pairs of the Patriots. That's a promise. It's already done. It's sitting there stewing. It's already waiting. It's automatically going to drop. I'll be back tomorrow with the Pairs of the Patriots. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson will be here Wednesday with his Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Johnson will be back Thursday with his Daily Nationalist. And hopefully this Friday show won't suck to the point where I just don't post it. And I will be hopefully back this Friday to wrap up your week with the Daily Nationalist. So I hope you have a good week. I'll be seeing you officially. If I see you Friday, it'll be a new year. I hope you have a safe, happy new year. We'll see you on the other side. Keep the faith. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.